From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
Wildlife officials in Metlakatla continue to trap record-setting numbers of the invasive crab species that threaten local subsistence food sources and fish habitat. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, the tribe's Department of Fish and Wildlife has trapped hundreds of European green crabs, and the numbers keep growing.
Months after the first green crab shell was found on the beach in Metlakatla, the community is still trying to figure out how to handle the arrival of a species that officials call one of the most invasive around. They're known to destroy fish habitat, eat other shellfish, and compete for vital resources. Dustin Winter directs the tribe's Department of Fish and Wildlife. He says his department is doing all it can to keep up as the numbers soar, and as of now, that means trapping as much as possible.
I mean, right now we're just trying to do it internally as much as we can. It's definitely increased the workload for the department, but right now there isn't any real long-term plans as far as moving forward other than what we're doing. I mean, we're going to try to keep those traps in the water in Tamgus Harbor and in other locations as we monitor those areas too, but short-term goals is just keep the traps in the water in Tamgus.
But so far, that hasn't seemed to put a dent in the population. Officials trapped a record 62 crabs on October 4th. That's a record for a single-day haul that broke the standing record of 38, set just the day before, and wildlife monitors found another 55 the day after, according to Metlakatla's mayor. Winter says Tamgus Harbor has turned into a hotspot for the crabs.
Well, it's pretty concerning for us. I mean, we were going from single digits to, you know, we had a record of 11 last week and then 13 at the end of the week, and then this week we've got, you know, a one-day catch of 38 and the next day of 62, so it's very concerning.
Wildlife officials have been setting shrimp pots to catch the crabs.
They're real fine mesh. I think they're only like a half-inch mesh, so because the juvenile crab that we're catching at the beginning were pretty small, so the shrimp pots are working really well.
When they're caught, wildlife officials collect biological information and freeze them. Once the crabs are dead, they're tossed into the compost pile at Metlakatla's community garden. Communities across the Pacific Northwest and the country have struggled to fight the spread of invasive green crabs. Most efforts have focused on trapping as many as possible. Washington Governor Jay Inslee declared an ongoing state of emergency in January because of the crab invasion across the state. Chase Gunnell is a public information officer for Washington's Fish and Wildlife Department. He says the crabs have been around the state for more than 20 years, but they've recently spiked to concerning levels in the Puget Sound and Salish Sea.
We, at this point, have removed more than 170,000 European green crabs from Washington waters this year alone.
He says trapping is the only technique that Washington has used against the crabs.
And our focus is really boots in the mud, getting traps out there, helping to to coach the public on how to identify European green crabs so they can report them. But our focus is on population control through trapping.
But he says he doesn't think wildlife authorities will be able to exterminate the species.
We are very concerned about potential impacts on our native species, on aquaculture, and we want to do everything we can to control this invasive species. At least in Washington, we don't expect that we'll be able to eradicate them, that we know that they're here. We're not going to be able to remove all of them from our waters.
Further down the coast, wildlife officials are trying to make the crabs an attractive target for fishermen. In Oregon this summer, officials raised the recreational bag limit of the crabs to 35. That's to try and stop crabbers from throwing any green crabs they catch by accident back into the water to avoid fines. There are even a few recipes floating around Oregon's government website. And some have tried even more creative solutions. A distillery in New Hampshire is turning the creatures into crab-flavored whiskey. Officials are asking Alaskans in Metlakatla and elsewhere to keep an eye out for green crabs. European green crabs are the only species in Alaska that has three bumps between its eyes and five spines behind each eye. Winter says that anyone who thinks they've seen a green crab, dead or alive, should contact Metlakatla's Fish and Wildlife Department. Anyone who spots European green crabs outside of Metlakatla is encouraged to call the Invasive Species Hotline at 1-877-INVASIVE. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Canneries are a big part of Alaska's history. Throughout the 20th century, waves of immigrants, primarily from the Philippines, came to work alongside Alaska Native people in the canneries. The Mug Up exhibit at the Alaska State Museum in Juneau has been highlighting this history for the last 6 months.
And then these mug up breaks. Yes.
The exhibit features lots of historic films and photos. There are black and white posed photos from the turn of the 20th century and more candid photos taken by friends from the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. Some panels explore the histories of the different labor movements that swept through Alaska's canneries. There's even a recreation of a bunkhouse with a door covered in the names of the workers who slept there from the 1980s until 2009. And next to it is a mess hall with a hand-painted table and a handwritten weekend menu. Jackie Manning is the exhibit's curator. Her favorite thing is a little cart used to serve coffee to workers during what was called mug up time. And that's where the exhibit gets its name.
When I went up to Bristol Bay and I saw that little Cushman cart is what it's called, and heard the stories about how diverse the cannery crew was and how important that mug-up time was for camaraderie and everybody meeting and taking their breaks and just all the different languages you'd hear on the docks.
Oscar Peñaranda moved from the Philippines to Canada and eventually to California before coming to Alaska to work in a Bristol Bay cannery in the 1960s.
No, people sometimes, to start anew, they come here. You know? And other people also are running away from things. Some are have a specific destination to come. So there are many, many different reasons. But they always came back.
And he kept coming back. He worked 15 summer seasons in Alaska before deciding to stay in San Francisco full time. He's a historian now. He founded the San Francisco chapter of the Filipino American National Historical Society and wrote about his experiences as an Alaskero. That's the term for Filipinos who worked in Alaska's canneries. For Filipino American History Month, he was in Juneau last week for the closing of the exhibit. He recognized some names and faces in the exhibit, like the Filipino union leaders who formed the Alaska Cannery Workers Association. They were murdered in 1981. And he said that's when he stopped going to work in Alaska.
You don't get hired if you don't know anybody. You know, that's the two who were assassinated, that's what they were trying to clean up.
Peñaranda worked at the cannery for 14 years. And he said he kept going back for the camaraderie. He made lifelong friends.
We didn't feel like we had to get in touch between seasons because we were going to go the next season and catch up. That's part of the reason why we kept going.
The labor movements happening in the canneries paralleled his life in San Francisco in the winters. In 1968, he participated in strikes at San Francisco State that led to the forming of the school's College of Ethnic Studies. Peñaranda went on to teach literature and Filipino languages in high schools and colleges in California. He's now 78 years old, and he's thinking of returning to Bristol Bay next summer to work with an old friend. It will be the first time he will have worked at a cannery since he stopped over 40 years ago. And another reason that Peñaranda said he kept going back to cannery work was the chance to be a new version of himself.
you can reinvent yourself when you go to, when you work in the canneries. When you go to Alaska, you can reinvent yourself. You'll be a completely different. You don't like the way you are in San Francisco? Come to Alaska. Build, make your own reputation.
So, a different Oscar Peñaranda may return next summer. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Hundreds of elementary students from across the Kenai Peninsula gathered at Bear Creek and the Anchor River last week to learn about salmon and do an egg take. It was the first event in the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's annual Salmon in the Classroom program, which teaches students about salmon biology throughout the year. KBBI's Hope McKinney attended the event at the Anchor River and has this story.
That's the sound of dozens of children watching biologists collect a pair of coho salmon and fertilize their eggs on a cold morning at the river in Anchor Point. Biologists are also teaching the students the Pacific salmon life cycle, their external anatomy, how to identify the different species, and their different habitat requirements.
These kids absolutely think it's just one of the neatest things, seeing a salmon, putting their hands on a salmon, the fact that they're taking fertilized eggs back to their school to raise coho, the excitement and the smiles.
Jenny Gates is a state biologist in Soldotna. She says when the students take the fertilized coho salmon eggs back to their classrooms, they'll incubate the eggs and watch them develop through a number of different life cycle stages until they become adolescent fish, or fry. Then in the spring, they'll be releasing the fish into a landlocked lake. The department will also guide the students through fish dissections and ice fishing as part of the Salmon in the Classroom program, which Gates says has been around for more than two decades. She says students on the Kenai Peninsula and across Alaska already have a lot of knowledge surrounding salmon in their habitat, given its cultural, environmental, and economic significance here. But she says we can always learn more.
The message that we're trying to convey to these students or to the classrooms is just trying to foster a stewardship for a very important natural resource. Salmon, as we all know, is economically important to Alaska, not only for sports fishing, personal use, subsistence, or commercial fisheries. There's all sorts of environmental lessons that go along with our presentations, in addition to just salmon biology.
For Lucas Stumpf, a fisheries biologist who heads the Kenai Peninsula Education Program, this work is personal. He grew up in Palmer and says he can trace his love of biology back to when he was a student in a similar program.
I think it's incredibly important. I remember as a kid, first grade, we had a salmon dissection. And I don't remember much about first grade, but I do remember that day. So I don't know. I think it's special. You know, some kids will really resonate with it.
Stumpf says he hopes the egg take, the fish dissection, and salmon release foster a similar interest in these kids.
You know, there's multiple reasons why people would want to become a biologist, but it definitely sparked something, and I hope that happens here. You know, not even just becoming biologists, but just becoming good stewards of the land or the resource, the salmon.
27 classes from 15 schools in the Kenai Peninsula School District attended the two-day event. Reporting in Anchor Point, I'm Hope McKenney.